Hi, this is Tiffany. I just wanted to drop in to our podcast today and acknowledge COVID-19. The Digital to Learn podcast has pre-recorded episodes, and we do plan to continue on with those during this time. But we also just want to stop and acknowledge everything that you're going through and let you know that we're all in this together. And we hope that now more than ever, you find our content about digital learning relevant and useful in your daily lives. Everybody stay safe, and we just want to wish you some happy listening.
If you love science, you can connect to almost every single scientist that you've ever heard of. Mm-hmm. You can tweet to them. And one of the most powerful things for a kid is to have a tweet back to them, mm-hmm. to have a post back to them. And when the author of one of their favorite books responds to them, that is so incredibly motivating to them to know they care about my message. Mm-hmm. It's not just my teacher that's encouraging me. They care about my message too.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
We're back today with part two of our conversation. If you missed the first episode, go back and check it out on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or the Digital to Learn website. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast, and we are so excited about today's guests. Cynthia and Liv, welcome back to Digital to Learn.
Thank you.
So what do you see as the differential between typically what adults are able to do or choose to do with technology as opposed to their students? How about their skill levels?
Skill level. It's funny because Liv, it has no fear, like using mm-hmm. a device, where I'm much more like explicitly didactic. I have to think about things mm-hmm. that I'm doing, right? Now she knows what she wants to say. So it's funny because oftentimes I'll say, Liv, will you figure this out and tell me, like, give me the 411, like what's the easiest, the abridged mm-hmm. version of like using this app. And she figures it out like in a minute mm-hmm. or less sometimes. So it's funny because I often follow her lead. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
So I was listening to what you were just saying in that beginning part there and how really it's, we are all like our generation is growing up with these things around us, with these things happening that are happening online on all these online platforms. And that's what we're learning. And so even from watching me as a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, just using these devices to create mm-hmm. is really powerful mm-hmm. for people to see because a lot of the time, we just use our devices, especially in schools, for just assessing and testing. Right. But when you give the kids a chance to create about their passions, you can see how deep they can actually go within their thoughts and their message. And you can see like this whole other part of them that you didn't really know before. When you really say, talk about something you love, they can go on forever. Mm. Trust me, she knows. But they can get all of that stuff, even though they may need to tell them to slow down a little bit. It's so powerful to hear about these things that they know so much about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's part of the message too, Brad, is to really be mindful that when students are using technology, it broadens your message in so many unique and amazing ways. And I would hope that as teachers and as parents are talking with kids, that we really do focus on the idea that using technology helps you deepen your message. And I think that that's one of the things that is really powerful is that adults have to be willing to see that that's really what can happen. And I think we have to be careful observers of kid behavior with tech. Instead of kid judging, like judging the technology, mm-hmm. I used to do this with my graduate students. I would watch them just before class started and how instead of saying to myself, like, God, they can't ever put their phones down. I instead would be like, this is really cool because if I were to think about how we could do accountable talk right now around this text that we're going to talk about, if I said, let's accountable text to each other and let's create a text thread, which I used to do, we'd have really rich discussion. It's just a different mm-hmm. type of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So
I think that's the key is really entering in and following students' leads and really listening to them as they're, you know, what types of things are their vibe for creating. Hmm.
Well, I have a confession to make. In preparation for our time together today, I was so wanting to be able to share with you when Shark Week is occurring on the Discovery Channel.
You know that.
Yeah, I already got it marked down. I watch it every year. And sometimes we're usually in hotels for the summer, like dance intensives. And I come back from like a full day of dance and I'm like sitting there for 3 hours, like with my eyes at the TV, just watching the Discovery Channel.
Well, also weeping, because sometimes she's really sad if it's like the sad shark story.
I know. I like it when they're like exploring them and doing all the, but then sometimes they're like, and then the shark was sadly
it has
killed.
A disease.
And I was like, oh, shark can't have a disease.
Yeah.
Then I get kind of sad.
Yeah, I have this great memory of Liv. You know, one tweet from Liv connected her to Dr. Lisa Hoops at the Georgia Aquarium. It's one of the only places in the world that actually keeps whale sharks. And Liv tweeted at her about her passion about sharks. And she's met up with Dr. Hoops twice
really?
About the whale sharks. And this is the other thing I hope people see is that, like, people care about your kids. People care about growing your passions. I'm not a scientist of sharks. And so I can bring Liv to the library, I can bring her to an aquarium, but I can't teach her the way Dr. Hoops can. And there are people out there that really do care about growing kids and their passions. And so Liv was fortunate enough to be able to meet her. And it's just, that's a vivid memory that I have, is the awe that Liv had, that there's a lady out there, there's a woman out there who does what I want to do someday. And I got to meet her. She cared enough about me to like take time out of her schedule and show me the whale sharks like up close. And I think that's the most beautiful story, from this digital space into this real space. It's all real. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Hoops is real. She's somebody that we can actually meet. And so it was pretty neat to see how that all happened.
And technology opened that door for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really
one tweet from
Dr. Lisa Hoops like opened up so many other doors.
So Liv, you have so many interests and so many passions. Is it premature to start asking you about career possibilities?
I don't think so. I kind of already got my life figured out. I don't really know what I want to
Okay.
do.
Well, teach us.
So
teach us.
I want to be a shark nutritionist, which is what Dr. Lisa Hoops does, where she works on the nutrition of sharks. And she figures out, like, for example, what the whale sharks are going to eat and how they're going to get their food, because sharks can't stop moving, so they can't just throw in the food. They have to figure out all these different ways in order to do that. And I also want to be a doctor, a pediatrician, and then I also want to be a teacher.
Okay.
So we have to find a way to combine all those things,
yes.
Right?
Well, you know what? In the short time that I've known you, I think all three of those things can certainly happen. I have no doubt that you could accomplish that.
And on the side of ballerina, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's a ballerina at night.
Oh.
We can be teacher, shark nutritionist, and pediatrician by day and dancer by night.
Or maybe you could take care of baby sharks. Pediatrician.
Ooh, that could be a pediatrician plus a shark scientist.
Yeah.
And then, that already combines the other
do
two.
Do your dance
Perfect.
Classes at night. There you go, right?
So is your dance preference ballet? Is that what you do? Okay. So how do you manage to fit all of these things into 24-hour time periods?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So usually what we do is I kind of have one day off where I like to do a lot of lip-fit work. And then on the other days, I focus on getting my schoolwork done. But really, I really do feel like that school isn't just in the building where they say it is, in the classroom where the teacher is like teaching you exactly what you need to be doing in all these worksheets and online. I think that really I'm learning everywhere that I go. When I'm going to do a school visit, I'm learning there. When I'm at a conference and sessions, I'm learning there about what other people have to say and how they're making their mark on the world.
So are you a person who maintains to-do lists? Do you have a checklist of things you have to accomplish?
I have a checklist. I had
that
the long-term
so hard
checklist,
to guess.
And I had the short-term checklist.
Oh.
So the short-term checklist could just be like for a week. This is what I want to do this week. This is what I want to get done. And usually it's clean my room. Surprisingly, I do that a lot. I don't even know why. And then the other checklist would be a long-term for my long-term goals that I want to accomplish in life.
Yeah. I think it's kind of funny because she is kind of a checklisty kid, but she's also just wild and crazy. And like, I think you can kind of feel it as you're watching her. Like, so although she likes a good to-do list, I think she's also just, you know, she really is just a kid. So she doesn't always remember when she has to be somewhere or do something.
Yeah.
It's so pretty typical.
It's hilarious. Usually when we get to an airport, I'm like, wait, where are we again? My mom has to like remind me that, oh, we're in California. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then it happened once or twice where I'm like, hello, New Jersey. And I'm like, oh, wow. It's okay. We're working on it.
Yeah.
So we want to point people to your book, which is remarkable. What are some of your favorite parts of the book?
Oh,
can I go first?
Sure.
So my favorite part of the book is definitely how each chapter features a different kid making their mark. Mm-hmm. Some of the kids, for example, would be Jordan. She has autism, and she uses technology to communicate with others. And then
wonderful.
There's also Nate, who has his own podcast, The Show About Science, and he just came out with his newest podcast, The Show About Politics. And I think that Jordan and Nate and all the other kids in the book really show us that kids can teach us.
Absolutely, right.
I'm going to make a true confession about the book. So
okay.
Liv wrote all of her parts before I wrote. So as the book is set up, it's this really, I think, a nice dialogue between Liv and I. Liv always leads the chapter with a really good question.
Except for the last chapter.
Hold on. So she leads every chapter and she sort of sets it up for me and then my job. And she also wrote all the spotlights on the kids. And my job really is to build off of Liv's intro for every chapter. But it's true confession that Liv is a really good writer. And I got a little bit of writing stage fright because she had done all her work before I wrote the chapters.
We always say it's hard to go after Liv.
Wow.
Yes,
sometimes
it's hard to go after Liv, and especially if you're the writer. So I had a lot of like issues with trying to expand with the theory and all the practical applications sometimes because I would get stymied by Liv's just the, I don't know, her joie de vivre, the way that she was able to really like put her spin on each chapter. And I hope that when people pick up the book too, they really do see it as a practical application. There's really great lessons that were given to us by teachers we really admire from all over the world. And they're all aligned to the ISTE standards. So if you're the kind of person that has to prove how a lesson is connected to something that's standards-based, then the book can really be helpful with that as well.
So can you remember the moment when you looked at each other and said, hey, let's write a book?
Oh, that's a good question.
So really when we were writing this book, it wasn't exactly we got the book deal and then we started thinking about all these thoughts and what we've done and putting it into a book. We've really been writing this book for the 3.5 years that I've been doing LiveBits. And even though we didn't know that we were writing it, we were just writing down notes of the things that happened and the things we want to do and and our story. We've been collecting stories. And then when we
got
the book deal, we kind of already knew what we wanted to say. We just had to put it into pages.
She's right. I mean, I think that's why it was so easy for Liv to write her parts was because they really were born out of, you know, the experiences that she had from helping educate people all over the world. Like right from the very beginning of LiveBits, there'd just be a great story. And Liv is a great storyteller. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why she makes a great keynote speaker is because she really can, she just can tell a really good story. And so I do feel like our book, so my writing friend who was my coach while I was writing, she would often laugh because she's more Liv's coach than she was mine. But while I was writing the book, I really needed to have a coach as well. And so I asked her, she'd read my parts. The hard part was that Heather is so familiar with Liv's writing, she wasn't as familiar with mine. And so as I was writing, I had such stage fright and she would say things like, Cynthia, you've turned this book into a memoir. because I would try to work off of Liv's stories. And sometimes that isn't always like the best stance. So I had to learn my writer's voice. And I really did learn it from, you know, listening to my 11-year-old tell the story. Yeah.
Very good. So is there a Spark Change 2.0 in the future?
Oh, you are the first person that has ever asked that. Yeah, tell.
So I really want to start writing a Spark Change Kids narrative.
Oh, nice.
This was going to be kind of like a second book, not so much as a sequel,
yeah,
but as another book to go along with it as a kid's guide to making their mark and sharing their story. And
yeah,
there are hints of it. Like I'm still, of course, sharing things like that in the Spark Change book that we have now. But I want to kind of take that and even like expand and elaborate on that more in another book.
Yeah. And actually, that is our next project, is we are writing the Spark Change sister book that will be for students specifically.
Nice.
We feel like our book is already for students because it features the purpose of our book, Spark Change, really is we hope teachers will use the book with their students and share about the student spotlights and do the activities, of course. But we want a specific book that will be a sister text that's for kids, that will talk about the Spark Change story. So that's our next 2.0 version of the text. And we hope it's out actually next fall.
Wonderful. Yeah. Which I'm guessing should lead to some good conversations, hopefully, between parents and children. Parents and kids talking to each other about what they're learning.
Yeah, for sure. We hope so. That would be our biggest dream, right?
Yes, it would be.
Well, we're looking forward to that, and we will clearly have to have you back on before that book is released to talk about that again.
You're our first one, because you're the first person to ask that question.
Oh,
thank
awesome.
You for that.
None of our other interviews have asked what the next step is. And so, yeah.
Well, put us on your schedule. No, we would love that.
You're at the top
that.
Of the list.
Thank you so much. You just made my
day.
Yay! So many of our listeners are faculty in higher education and administrators. So I'd like to ask each of you, you've got this platform. There are tens of millions of people listening right now. That's in my head alone. Probably the 10 part is probably true. What would you like to say to faculty and administrators about technology and about change and about engaging with their students? Anything you want to say, it's up to you.
So as I said earlier in the interview about making sure that we're letting kids create with their devices and making sure that we're talking to them about their passions and not just telling them what to do, but not letting them decide, but letting them kind of guide you through what they love and making sure that we're really not looking through it through a fear-based mindset, and that we think about, instead of all of the don't do this, don't do that, when these kids are feeling like, oh, they really want to go and explore, then we really have to encourage them with positive things that have happened. So, like, you can connect, if you love science, you can connect to almost every single scientist that you've ever heard of. Mm-hmm. You can tweet to them. And one of the most powerful things for a kid is to have a tweet back to them, to have a post back to them. And when the author of one of their favorite books responds to them, that is so incredibly motivating to them. To know they care about my message. Mm-hmm. It's not just my teacher that's encouraging me. They care about my message too.
And I would say for faculty and administrators that we really do need to follow children's leads and really explore these platforms together, to remember that there's so much potential for amazing things to happen. That, and when we let students lead the learning, we can learn so much more deeply around their passions and just around the things that really make and matter to kids, what makes them tick.
That is an exciting message.
Yeah. We hope to spark change, of course.
Yes, absolutely. Liv, when you were sharing that concept of a child somewhere, a young person, tweeting to their favorite author, I began to wonder, I wonder how many young people know that they have that available to them.
I think that was one of the things that I really want teachers to know, is that you have to make sure that we're not just using these devices as a way to assess kids, and that they are not just able to, but are being taught how to use these devices. Because you can say, go on a device and create, but they may not know how to do that. Mm. And so that's one of the things that I love to do when I go to school visits. I see all these kids that are hungry to be able to create on a device. And when I give them these places like Padlet, and Flipgrid and using clips. And I show them how they can make videos to talk about their passions.
Absolutely.
Then that just, I've done that, and it's like an amazing feeling.
Yeah, and I want to say too that we are mindful that there are lots of rules about being on these platforms, and that teachers can actually show the power of a classroom account, right? And we can teach all the same behaviors in very safe spaces, like Liv mentioned a few of her favorite apps, but Seesaw and Flipgrid and Padlet, those are really great apps to use that mimic the platforms that Liv is currently on and that are, you know, compliant with all the rules that have to happen within school communities. And so I really do hope that we teach those explicit behaviors and we do it in a way that's that is joyful for kids, to show them that those spaces can create, you know, so much feedback and joy for their work
Absolutely.
To continue.
To flip that around, I was thinking of being an author and receiving a tweet or some other message from a 10-year-old in some other part of the world who's been touched by the book you wrote. That, what could be better than that?
And
that would be remarkable.
It doesn't just feel good for the kid when they get a response. Mm-hmm. It feels good to the person that's getting the that's giving that response. That
Absolutely.
Kid, yeah. To be able to know
Absolutely.
That
well,
kids
that's
are
that
giving
loop.
You feedback.
Right, that's
it's
that
the
loop.
Feedback loop.
That's the loop that we talked about, is the power of that connection and the looping, right? That it's not just the reciprocity in that. And so for Liv, you know, when she's 8 years old and she's creating these videos, and all of a sudden a school in Taiwan is using her videos, and she gets messages from these students who say to her, "Hey, Liv, did you know that we use your videos about your book videos, your Liv bits, to help us learn English? Can you please slow down your talking?" Like, all of a sudden we were like, that's a whole other part of feedback, because we never imagined that people would be using Liv's video for that. And so,
Absolutely.
Wow, right? Like, just the way that expands Liv's work, and something that just initially began as a place to create for books then becomes this place to create with somebody who doesn't speak English as a first language. Be more mindful of that. Like, what an amazing experience. And that's part of what this work brought to her.
And one of our author friends told us when we were writing the book about how it's the reader that completes the book. You have to have the publisher and the editor and the author and the book, but the thing that completes the whole process is the reader.
Yeah, that was from Deborah Friedman. And I feel like, isn't that a really cool thing to think about on these platforms, is that your audience completes your story. So if you're
Absolutely.
Putting a post out there and you're saying something about your thinking and your learning, it's the way your audience receives it that's the most potential for your feedback, and it completes your message. So both the good and the bad, right? Like, really being mindful that you can't really take back the words that you put out there if they're not positive, because your audience completes that. And so I feel like that's such a powerful message for us to hold on to, is this way that audience impacts our message, and to be mindful of that, explicitly teaching it to students. But to be honest with you, to adults, because I don't feel like we've learned that either. So we're exploring these spaces, and we're not experts in these spaces. And I feel like that's the power of the work that Liv and I, and that's the spark change message that we really hope resonates, is the idea that we want to have this collaborative, this collaborama with kids, and to really grow that. Yeah, collaborate. Liv and I always say that. Let's have a collaborama.
I got to tell you, this has been such a wonderful experience, getting the chance to meet the two of you, to see how you are relating to one another, your enthusiasm about the work you're doing, and it's just been remarkable. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're so excited to be able to share our message, and thanks for giving us this opportunity. And you're in Indiana, right?
Yes, we are.
Well, we like the Midwest. The Midwest loves Liv. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to seeing you again, talking with you again sometime next fall when Spark Change 2.0 comes out.
Absolutely.
First on our list.
They're top.
Top of the list.
Very good. We love that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.